Archie! Archie, open up there! Come on, come on!
Yes, sir?
Well, you took your time. I wish to see the chairman.
I'm sorry, sir. There is no chairman here.
But this is the Mausoleum Club.
The Mausoleum Club, sir?
The Mausoleum... Well, yeah, well, so it is.
Indeed, sir, but...
Do you know how many doors I've knocked on before I found this one? Why don't you have a nameplate?
To keep the vulgar element away, sir.
Oh, yes, well, of course, yes. Now, kindly inform the chairman that I wish to become a member.
I have already told you, sir.
And tell him it's the Honourable Clarence Green.
But, sir...
Have you heard of my father? Lord Justice Green?
A judge, eh?
Yes. Well, I don't think he'd be very well disposed to an establishment that treats his son in this manner.
Very well, sir. Will you come this way, please?
Thank you. Well, hang on a second. I haven't paid the cabbie yet.
I don't think you'll be seeing him again, sir.
Tales from the Mausoleum Club, written by Ian Brown and James Hendry, starring Terence Stamp, Joss Ackland, Spike Milligan, Andrew Sachs, Royce Mills, Sheila Stiefel, Michael Ripper, Arthur Smith, and Adam Wide. Episode 1, The Inaudible Man.
Yes, what is it, Felch?
There's a Mr. Green to see you, sir. He says that...
Yes, I wish to become a member.
Does he indeed? Are you sure you have given this desire full and serious consideration, Mr. Green?
Of course. I'm well known in society as a collector of clubs. I'm a member of the Reform, the Athenaeum, the Club of Queer Trades, the League of Washerwomen, and the Seven False Noses. Yeah. So why is it that I've only heard of the Mausoleum Club? The Mausoleum Club in Rumours and Whispers.
You must understand, sir, that this club is a little more exclusive.
What, do you doubt, sir, that I... who have taken the terrible oath of the balloonist circle, I can fail to meet your requirements.
It's not quite as simple as that, Mr. Green.
No. You see, the club has only two requirements.
Only two?
The first is that each member should be able to relate an enthralling episode from his life.
Oh, nothing simpler. And the second?
Mr. Green, you are still very young. Are you sure that your tender years have delivered an incident that will satisfy our rules?
Well, absolutely. Do you suppose that I, who have crossed the Gobi Desert by velocipede, captured Hollenbach's carnivorous butterfly, or wrestled with us the secret giraffe? I have.
Mr. Green. I hardly think these trifles will fulfill the first requirement, let alone the second.
Oh, very well. Well, since your life, sir, has been so full of incident, let's hear your enthralling episode.
dear, Mr. Green, you are proving hard to dissuade. So be it. Be seated. And let me relate to you the curious tale of the inaudible man. My name is Dr. Nathaniel Bates. And 20 years ago, I had a small practice in Harley Street, where I specialized in the treatment of the ear, nose, and throat. Come in, Mr. Hornby. What seems to be the matter today?
I've lost my voice.
Speak up, man. Can't hear you.
I've lost my voice.
What?
Are you deaf?
I said...
Ah, you've lost your voice.
Yes.
Well, you've come to the right man. Perhaps you'd care to step over to the newly patented electrogalvanator.
Yes, please.
Now... take hold of these two handles while I turn the crank. Ah, that seems to have done the trick. That would be 10 guineas.
What?
Ah, improving by the second. Come again next week.
You must be bloody joking!
Marvels of science.
Yes, the marvels of science indeed, Bates.
What? Who's there?
No one's there, Bates, but you.
Then where are you?
Me, Bates. I'm here.
What's going on? Mrs. Boyle?
Goodbye, Bates. You shall hear from me again.
What is it, sir? You look all pale.
Mrs. Boyle, do you see anyone in this room?
Yes, sir.
Where?
It's you, sir.
Yes, yes, but is there anyone else?
Yes, sir.
Who?
Me, sir.
Oh, that will be all, Mrs. Boyle.
It was clear that I had been overworking, or perhaps I was suffering from some heretofore undiscovered influence from the electrogalvanator. But that same evening, as I posted some letters into the nearby pillar box.
No. One, two, last one, three.
Oh, 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 Bates! What were you dropping those letters?
What?
Can't a fella get some sleep in his own pillar box?
Who's in there? How did you get in? Are you a dwarf? Hello? 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 Hello?
Oi, Fred, come and look. There's a geezer here what's talking to a pillar box.
Huh? Nonsense. Nonsense.
Yes, sir. But you know what
they say? Felix qui potuit rerum cognoscere causas.
Eh? A crossing sweeper who quotes from Virgil?
Oh!
Preposterous!
I hurried away in some distress, for it was clear now that I was ridden either by madness or an evil spirit. In either case, there was only one course of action open to me, a visit to a practitioner of the newly invented science of psychoanalysis, Dr. I.M. Looney. His professional name, of course.
So, Dr. Bates, what is your ailment?
I keep hearing these voices.
No, this is perfectly normal.
Is it?
Yes, I hear voices all the time. In fact, I can hear one at the moment.
Yes, it's mine.
Oh, no matter. Let's try animal magnetism.
Eh?
Take this cat. Rub it up and down on your chest. See if it sticks.
No, no. I'm looking for relief, not rabies.
Then I have the very thing. Take hold of these handles while I turn the crank of the electrogalvanator.
No. I really must be off. I have a prior engagement.
No, wait. It's new. It's scientific. I love it. Oh, darling, I love you, darling. I've always loved you. The Queen!
My prior engagement was a recital by one of my former patients, the blind baritone, Arturo Ghirardani. It was thanks to my skills as a physician that Arturo's hearing had been rescued from the same fate as his sight. Indeed, his oral capacity was greatly improved by my ministrations. Yet here I was, entertaining a fear for the safety of my own senses that not even Arturo's magnificent singing could dispel.
Half to three, Professor. One, a two, a three. Nay, Havana, Seagull. The lead is all smooth when I bring it to town. It's long and it's thick and it costs half a crown. The people all cheer when I wave it about, because it's 9 inches long and 4 inches stout. It's such a whopper, so get out your chopper and clip off the tip off my chipper cigar.
Please, I beg you, Signora, it was not I, not I.
The audience were furious, whereas I could scarcely contain my joy. The fact that the intrusion into Arturo's performance was heard by the rest of the audience could mean only one thing, that I was no victim of madness, but of some devilishly clever ventriloquial prankster. But why? And to what purpose? As I hurried home to my rooms that night, the answer was not long coming.
Bates, did you enjoy my little sing-song?
Show yourself, you coward. I'm ready for you now.
Not here. Not yet. Meet me at 9 o'clock tonight in the scrubland, to the west of the Spaniard Inn, Hampstead.
That night, as I waited on Hampstead Heath, I mused on the identity of my unseen interlocutor. Was he some defrocked ventriloquist? Some unemployed magician? Or worst of all, an anarchist with a megaphone? The appointed hour came and went, and still I waited. Then, just as I was prepared to dismiss the assignation as a further mischievous prank, my gaze was fastened by a grotesque apparition. I beheld, silhouetted by the dying sun, the figure of a man, yet with a head so monstrous huge that I fancied myself in the presence of some ogre or hobgoblin. But as I conquered my fear and drew close, I perceived that it was indeed a human being, but whose head was encased in a bizarre apparatus which resembled nothing so much as an oversized diving helmet. Projecting from either side was a pair of enormous ear trumpets, and from the front, a speaking tube of prodigious proportions. The whole was girt about with steam pumps, brass pipes, and valves. He looked a complete and utter chump.
What the devil is this? Who are you? Speak, can't you, clown?
His speechless mouthings indicated he couldn't, and with much waving of the arms, the prodigy motioned me backwards until we were separated by a good 50 yards.
Hello, Bates. Hello. Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
There's no need to shout. I can hear you perfectly well.
What is the meaning of this?
What's the matter? Don't you recognize your old student chum?
Huh?
It's Wyvern.
Wyvern? I thought you were dead.
You mean my little accident when I was hurt in the Galapagos? Well, fortunately, the turtle did not entirely rip out my throat, so I preserved my life, if not my voice.
But you are speaking to me now.
Indeed. In my efforts to restore my powers of speech, I developed a quantum theory of sound, and that's not easy, which resulted in a means of transmitting my voice through the ether in small packets, as it were.
You mean this fantastical apparatus?
Yes. Through Wyvern's patent projector, my voice may only be heard by the intended recipient, whether miles, leagues, or half a world away.
So this explains my strange voices. Arturo's vulgar performance, the Virgil quoting Mudlark.
And don't forget my favorite, the man in the pillar box.
But this is marvelous. The transmission of speech without pen, without paper, without telegraphy. What a blessing to man.
What man would choose to suffer my deprivation?
Deprivation?
Yes. You see, in order to function, the projector must be grafted into the subject's trachea. But from that point on, no normal social intercourse is possible.
What?
Bates, the projector will only work at a distance.
So that's why we're so far apart.
Were I to come any closer, I would become totally inaudible.
But surely this is a small price to pay for such a tremendous boon.
Boon? Boon, Bates! Have you tried buying an eel pie at 50 yards? It's hell, I tell you.
But, Wyvern, you're a genius.
Yes, I know. And I'm starving. Got me talk.
As I brought the famished savant, an individual fondant fancy I had been saving for some destitute orphan, I began to realize the enormity of his handicap. A round trip of 100 yards was necessary before he could speak to me again. For Wyvern, tea time conversation was over. Forever.
Oh, that's better. Now, for your part in this.
My part?
Yes. I need someone to handle my riches.
What riches?
The riches I intend to extort from the government on Tuesday next. If by that time they have not delivered through you the sum of 100,000 guineas, which is a lot of money in these days, I shall declare war on France.
You? But how?
You remember my little parlor trick at the opera? Well, substitute the House of Commons for the theatre, and instead of a blind opera singer, Mr. Gladstone, say. And I shall direct the destiny of a nation.
Why?
Yes. Brilliant, isn't it? No, I must be going. I shall speak to you again.
I threw myself at the demonic genius, forgetting that he was 50 yards away. And by the time I'd picked myself out of the mire, he had vanished into the night. It was clear that Wyvern's sufferings had unhinged his reason. There was but one thing a dutiful citizen could do, and straight away I proceeded to Downing Street for an audience with the Prime Minister himself.
Put Keith down, Constable.
Look out, he's getting away.
I must speak with Mr. Gladstone.
You bloody anarchist, knock him on the head.
It's all right, I've got hold of his breeches.
Oh no, he's escaped.
Stop, madman.
No, come back.
Come here, oi.
So running all the way to my surgery, I thanked the Lord for cheap tailoring.
Oh, Mr. Bates, been on the razzle, have we?
What do you mean?
No trousers. I'll see if Mr. B has any spare.
No, no, leave me.
He has a nice yellow pair of...
Alone at last.
I'm afraid not, Bates.
Oh, no. Is there no end to it?
What do you think you are up to? Not quite the loyal lieutenant I was counting on.
Shut up!
We were bosom friends in our student days, pulling the wings off moths, discrediting chaplains. To think we once shared the same shaving mug.
What? Wait a minute. You're thinking of Stinker Baines.
Who?
I'm not Baines. I'm Bates.
Bates? Oh, no, not Spotty Bates, the college creep.
That's right.
Oh, bugger. Trust me to get the goody-goody.
Well, now your evil ambitions will come to naught.
Nonsense. You couldn't even persuade the flat-feet at Downing Street to believe you. And Mr. Gladstone speaks on foreign affairs tomorrow.
Then I shall thwart to myself.
Try and find me. Spot it.
I flung myself down in despair, for Wyvern had pinpointed my weakness. Not that I am Spotty, that's all cleared up now, but that whereas his whereabouts would remain a mystery to me, he could at any time ascertain my location through his infernal steam-driven ear trumpets. If only my hearing were as good as his. If only. If only.
Mrs. Boyle, fetch me my writing case at once.
What about the trousers?
Not now, please.
Morning, Dr. Bates. There's... Looks! What are you doing with me pots and pans?
Never mind. What do you want?
There's a Mr. Blind or Two Road to see you.
Ah, send him in at once.
Hello! Hello! Buongiorno! I got your message, but I fail to see how a blind man can help you against this monster, this creatore.
Just bang these saucepans together.
What? What? Oh, si, si. Like this.
There. Now our conversation is inaudible to him.
Fantastico!
Now, when Wyvern speaks, as I think he soon may...
Yes!
I want you to point to the direction his voice is coming from.
Ah, direction, of course. I will do my utmost to...
Bates! What are you doing? What is that infernal racket?
There he is. Stop now.
Shh. Answer me! What's going on?
I
thought I'd best check that you weren't plotting mischief.
Please keep him talking.
What makes you think that?
The Prime Minister speaks in 90 minutes. You must be getting desperate.
Nonsense.
Well, you should be. The police will soon be at your door. They're looking for Bates, the trouserless anarchist. And unfortunately, I was able to give them your address.
I've got it. He's over there.
What? Who's that? Who's with you?
Thank you, Arturo.
According to my compass, a bearing of 155 degrees.
155.
Now, where's my map and protractor?
Open up in the name of the law!
Yorkshire mercy, Dr. Beitch. It's the police.
Then there's no time to lose. Mrs. Boyle,
yes.
You must keep them talking as best you can.
Oh, dear. All right. All right, I'm coming! Can I help you, gentlemen?
Give us Bates, the trouserless anarchist.
He's a threat to the Empire.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. Mind you, I must say he has been acting awful queer lately.
Help, help! Dr. Bates has run amok.
Oh, it's Blind Arturo, the famous singer.
Give us a song, sir.
No, you don't understand. He attack me.
Oh.
He's in there, completamente mad.
All right, sir, you just wait out there. Come on, men.
I'm coming.
But it's Blind Arturo, the famous singer.
But he's outside.
Quick, help me untie him.
No, oh, grazie. It's Bates. He went mad, took my clothes and tied me up.
Oh, no. Come on, men, out the front.
Too late, he's gone.
Still, we'd better see how Mr. Arturo is.
Oh, he's gone too.
Oh, that old trick. Arturo. Arturo.
Ah.
Over here. I'm in a cab. Two steps up. That's it.
Oh, what a splendid trick. Stupendo.
Drive on, cabby. We made all speed to Richmond Park, where, thanks to frequent goadings from Wyvern, my sharp-eared friend was soon able to effect a second bearing.
I know you're trying to find me, Bates. But you're miles off course, do you hear? Richmond Park, indeed.
That way, rapido!
Good. 105 degrees.
And the Prime Minister speaks in 40 minutes.
Drive on, cabby.
I put it to this house.
Put
the introduction of the electro-galvanator to the benighted natives of Borneo will do more than anything else to extend Her Majesty's Empire to that savage corner of the globe.
Mr. Gladstone?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I should like, with your permission, to make a statement on foreign affairs. But first, a few words about the spread of lewdness that has not only infected our music halls, but is now spreading to the opera house itself.
Can you see him yet, Dr. Bates?
No. There are so many confounded machines here. Trust Wyvern to be drawn to the Crystal Palace.
Ah, il Palazzo Cristallo!
A glass temple to that science which has no morality of itself. Depending on
Shut up!
What?
I can hear footsteps, but they are above.
Of course, the roof.
Do you see him?
Yes. No. My service revolver.
Uh-huh.
Keep still, Wyvern. Keep still.
Seize that man. It's Bates, the trouserless anarchist.
And he's got a gun.
Damn!
He's heading for the roof.
Out of my way.
No, that ain't. You can't go up there, sir. Ooh. Unless you've got a gun, of course.
Quick, after him!
Yeah, you can't go up there, Constable. The glass isn't safe.
But there's a socialist at large.
Oh, well, in that case, sure, up we go.
To build a society in which there is no place for such lyrics as "It's stiff and it's long, and by Jove, is it strong?" So come, have a puff on my giant cigar. And now, with your permission, Mr. Speaker,
I should like to make a declaration of war on our neighbors, damn you, Bates. How did you find me?
Order!
How the hell did you work it out?
You see, it's quite simple. We took two bearings and used triangulation to pinpoint your position on the map. You see?
Bates! You bloody swat! You are always wasting your time on trig when you should have been dissecting flies. Spotty! Goody, goody!
Any further taunts from Wyvern were silenced by my moving inside the 50-yard radius of his audibility.
Hey, there he is! Oi! Keep off the glass! And you, Constable, don't walk on the glass!
Ha! Caught you at last, you devil!
We wrestled. And thanks to Wyvern's top-heavy contraption, it took no more than a small push from me to topple him.
So, that was the end of Wyvern, cracked open like a lobster on an exhibit of Mr. Graham Bell's telephone, the very invention that would render his discovery obsolete.
So, Europe was saved from war, and the story has a happy ending.
Not quite.
Oh?
I explained everything to the police, of course. But who would believe such an incredible tale? Especially as my only evidence, Wyvern's projector, was intermingled with the remnants of Mr. Graham Bell's exhibit. Wyvern was an innocent technologist, whereas I was Bates, the trouserless madman. As I told you, these events occurred 20 years ago. I was released from Bedlam Hospital last July.
Tales from the Mausoleum Club, Episode 1, The Inaudible Man, was written by Ian Brown and James Hendry and starred Terence Stamp, John...